Nice to see everybody. Nice to see my mum and dad. Nice to get you on the Zoom. Thank you for coming, and thank you all for coming. We have a lot of things to discuss today. It's going to be a fun share. I just would like to announce for next week that we are in a series on exotic kashrus issues. 2 weeks ago, we talked about fish and the swordfish. Last week, we talked about birds. This week we're going to talk about animals, and next week I hope you'll excuse me if we talk about locusts. I know that probably very few people here are interested in eating locusts, or maybe you're not interested in locusts at all. But I suspect that you probably haven't been to that many shiurim on the kashrus of locusts. I certainly have never given one, so I suspect that one shiur every 10 years or so on locust issues is probably about right. And therefore next week, please God, will be that shiur. So that's the plan for next week. But this week we're dealing with something much more terrestrial and down to earth, which is the issue of mammals. Let me first start with a dedication and a sponsorship. We're very grateful for sponsorship of today's shiur. It's sponsored anonymously in memory of Moshe ben Michael Shaul, Alav HaShalom, who left this world on the 6th of Sivan on Shavuot. And we are very grateful for that sponsorship. Thank you so much. And please God, the shiur should be an aliyah for his neshama. And if anyone is able to sponsor the shiur in future, then please be in touch with Mrs. Spivak or any of the other people in the OU. Okay. Like I said, we are in for a roller coaster of excitement today. I had a lot of fun preparing this shiur. We will be talking about all sorts of exotic animals. Buffalo, which is not that exotic, bison, zebu, and giraffe. And you'll see from the discussion that we move through that this will build up through the shiur until we understand hopefully a lot more about how these things work. I will share the screen in a second and maybe just make the usual announcement now that if anything goes wrong, if anything goes wrong with the issue of the Zoom, please don't worry. I will be back with you very, very soon. Don't run away. Now, somebody just said that the link to the source didn't work. I don't know if that's true for everybody in terms of the what I just put up on the site. I'm just loading it through again. Did anyone else find that the PDF did open okay? Did people get that through? I've just sent it through again. I hope there's no reason why it shouldn't work, but you never know with these things. Okay, that's gone through again. It says successfully. If someone is able to open that to let me know that it worked, then that's fine. If not, I apologize, but I will... yes, it works, someone says, so hopefully it works for everybody. I'll also share the screen, and that way we'll all be able to see everything on screen as well. Okay, fine. Let's start with the Torah itself. The Torah talks about different kinds of kashrus, and the Shulchan Aruch divides that into basically five different categories. There are mammals, which we'll be discussing today. There are fish, as we said 2 weeks ago, we discussed that. There are birds, there are invertebrates, which locusts and such like, which we'll discuss next time. And then there are bugs. We're not going to discuss the kashrus of bugs here. There's a lot to say about that. Needless to say, most bugs are not kosher, but not all of them. There are, in fact, worms and bugs that are kosher, and I brought a footnote on the sheet to that as well. I'm not getting into that now. Things that originated in a fruit when it was off the tree, never left the fruit, never crawled around, but I'm not getting into that now. 99.9% of bugs are not kosher, so let's leave it at that. However, mammals definitely are kosher. So let's have a look together at the psukim in the Torah. Anyone who was listening to the Leining last week, if they were able to hear the Leining, will have heard it in the Parsha. It's Parsha Sra'ei, and before that, Parsha Shmini. Let's start with Parsha Shmini. Everybody knows this, right? We were all taught this at school when we were very small, that anything that chews the cud and has a split hoof is kosher. However, there'll be details here that you will probably not have heard before. Let's look at number one. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe ve'el Aaron le'mor aleihem. So God says to Moshe and Aaron to pass on to the Jewish people. Dabru b'nei Yisrael le'mor zot ha'chaya asher tochlu. These are the chayot. Now chayot must mean the animals generally. These are the, and it also we'll see specifically means wild animals, but here it means animals. These are the animals that you can eat. Mikol ha'behema, and again that's a very technical word as well. Behema. Behema means a domesticated animal like a cow or a goat. Chaya, generally, it can mean all animals, but it also specifically means wild, non-domesticated animals like a deer, antelope, etc. So these are the animals, asher al-haaretz, which you can eat, which walk on the ground. Kol mafreset parsa, anything that has a split hoof, v'shosat shesa prasot, which means it's split all the way down the hoof, we'll see pictures in a minute, ma'alat geira, and it also chews the cud, more on that in a minute, b'behema, anything that does those two things, has a split hoof and chews the cud, and ruminates from all animals, ota tochelu, that's what you're allowed to eat. And now it gives you four animals which you might think are kosher, because they do one of these two things, potentially, but they're not. Ach etzeh lo tochlu. Here we are in the Dalet. This is what you can't eat. Mimale geira mafrise parsa. There are animals which appear to have split hooves, or appear to chew the cud, and you can't eat those. As follows. Et hagamal. Camels. Kimale geira hu, because they do chew the cud, they genuinely do. But they don't have a proper split hoof. They have a foot with toes, two toes, but it's not split all the way through. That is not kosher. There's a shafan. A shafan, it's not entirely clear what a shafan is. Probably a hyrax. You know, those little animals, furry animals that hide around in En Gedi, in the rocks and stuff. A hyrax, you are not allowed to eat. Kimale geirahu, because it chews the cud. Uparsa lo yefris, but again, it doesn't have a split hoof. Tamehu lachem. Now, I'll let you in on a secret. The hyrax and the hare, we'll see in a minute, actually do not technically chew the cud. When the Torah says they chew the cud, it means they do something that looks like they're chewing the cud. They regurgitate, if you like, pellets of food, and then they eat it again, they take it out, they put it back in, etc. They do something that you might confuse with chewing the cud. If you're interested in a very detailed analysis of the camel, the hare, and the hyrax, then I refer you to Rabbi Nathan Slifkin's book from 2004 of that name, The Camel, the Hare, and the Hyrax. And he goes through in that book all of the elements of, do they yes do the cud, why might you think they did or not? But the Torah says that it does something similar to that, but it doesn't have a split hoof, so a hyrax is no good. There's Arnevet, a hare. Kimala Geira, who again does something like chewing the cud. Uparasa Loi Hefrisa, but it doesn't have a split hoof. Tamehi Lechem, it's also Tame. Ve'et HaChazir, and finally the pig. He mafris parsahu, it does have a genuinely split hoof. Veshosa shesa parsa, and it has it split all the way down the middle. Vehu geira lo yigar, but it does not chew the cud. Tamei hu lachem. Okay, fine. Four animals. Camel, hare, hyrax, pig. Mibasaram lo tochelu, from any of these non-kosher animals you may not eat their flesh. Ubiniblatam lo tigar, you may not touch their carcasses. Tamei hu lachem. They are tamei as well. Okay, fine. That we all know. So basically the Torah seems to have said that there are two signs. If the animal has a split hoof, if it chews the cud, it's good enough. These four animals watch out for, because they're misleading, but everything else apparently is fine. In Re'eh, in Parshas Tvarim, in Sefer Tvarim, excuse me, in Parshas Re'eh, it does something a little bit different. Now this is actually a bit different to the bird situation and the fish. The last 2 weeks we've looked at birds and fish, the Torah is very, very similar, almost identical in Shmini and Re'eh. But when it comes to animals, it's not. It doesn't just give the test, it gives a list. Number two. Zot, this is what we read last week. Zot ha-behema asher tochelu. These are the animals that you can eat. A list of 10 animals. Listen carefully, we'll need to come back to this. 3 behemoths, 3 domesticated animals, and 7 chayas, 7 wild animals. Let's see what they are. Shor, now that's an ox. Sek fasim, sheep. Se'izim, goats. I'm not sure if we ever get any goat meat. I don't remember last time I had a goat dinner. But sheep, we certainly get lamb and beef, etc. And then here are the 7 chayot. We'll get to their identification in a minute. Ayal, tzvi. Now, ayal and tzvi will be words which are familiar to you. Some kind of deer antelope. Then 4 or 5 that you've probably never come across much. V'yachmor, v'akor, v'dishon, uta'or, v'zamer. So these 5 animals, the yachmor, the akor, the dishon, the ta'or, and the zamer, these are all kosher animals. These 10 are definitely kosher. And then it goes on to say, v'chol ha-behema mafresi parsa shosad shesa, shtei parsot ma'alad geira b'behema otot ha-chelu, and it goes through the test as well, the same as before. If you find an animal that chews the cud, that has a split hoof, you can eat those, and then it goes through the same 4 animals that you have to watch out for. The camel, the hare, the hyrax, and the pig. the camel, the hare, and the hyrax, because they appear to chew the cud. In the case of the camel, they do actually chew the cud, but they don't have a proper hoof. And in the case of the pig, because it has a proper hoof, split hoof, but it doesn't chew the cud. So probably no surprises there to most people. The actual identification of those animals, and here we start getting some pretty pictures on the screen as well. Kvasim and izim are pretty easy. It's ox, sheep, and goats. In terms of the others, so Rav Aryeh Kaplan analyzes them in his Living Torah, which is a very worthwhile read, very, very much, very well researched. And he says as follows. He suggests Ayal is a gazelle, a tzvi is a deer, Yachmor is an antelope, an Akko is an ibex, a Dishon is a chamois, some kind of small goat with decent leather for washing your car. To'a is a bison, and Zamer is a giraffe. Now, don't get too excited about those definitions, because they are all to some degree speculative. They are not entirely clear. For example, we'll get to the giraffe soon, and we'll talk about whether you can have giraffe for dinner. Again, Rav Aryeh Kaplan identifies the Zamer as the giraffe. We'll see where he gets that from, but we'll talk more about that soon. If you wish to be more academic about it, I brought you a link for an article that deals with something called archaeozoology. Archaeozoology is not a science that I'm familiar with. I'm a lot more familiar with it now than I was last week. But archaeozoology are people that go around digging up bones from thousands of years ago of different animals all around the world. And if you look at the bones that have survived over the last 3,000 years from the Late Bronze Age and Early Iron Age, you can start to put together a list of the animals that were around this area, around Eretz Yisrael, and based on the findings of the bones, and you can look at that article, it's online, they've identified that the most common animals are X, and then the next is Y, etc., etc. And in fact, it seems very likely that this list of animals is in order of prevalence. The most common are the behemoths, the domesticated animals, the ox, the sheep, and the goat. And then you go through Ayal, Tzvi, Yachmor, Akkad, Dishon, To'or, and Zamer, in order of prevalence, and also pretty much in order of the number of times they're mentioned in Tanakh. Now, in terms of split hooves, the wonder of Zoom is that I can show you some nice color pictures here. These are various split hooves of various different kosher animals. There's a deer, a mule deer, a goat, a cow, sheep, etc. You can see that they're split all the way through the hoof. That is shosat shesa. That means it's split all the way through, unlike an animal that has a slightly split hoof but doesn't split all the way. Chewing the cud, I'm not going to get into details. You may still be digesting your breakfast, and I don't want to make you feel unwell. But chewing the cud is a straightforward business. An animal basically either has, a ruminant has either four stomachs or three stomachs. Three could also work. A giraffe has three stomachs. And when it chews the cud, basically it quickly swallows the food, goes into stomach number one, comes the rumen, comes out again, gets chewed again, two, three, four, and it gets digested a number of times through chewing and re-swallowing and regurgitating, etc., until eventually it gets into the quote-unquote true stomach where the digestive juices really work. Obviously, if you're going to live on a diet of grass and plants, you need to do something pretty intensive to it. Either you have to have very strong stomach acid, or you have to go through this process of rumination in order to digest the food. So far, straightforward enough. Chewing the cud, split hooves. The Rambam gives us an interesting bottom line for this, which we need to kind of start with. It seems strange to start with the bottom line, but it's important here. Number three. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Ma'achalos Asuras. Ein lecha b'chol behema b'chaya sheba'olam. All of all the animals in the world, you only have shemutzah ba'achila, the only ones which are allowed to eat, chutz me'aseret haminim hamanuim b'Torah. Now, unlike birds, where we saw last week, the Torah lists the treif birds. So in theory, all of the other birds out there are kosher, apart from that list of 24 treif birds. With the animals, says the Rambam, that is not the case. With the animals, you only have a list of 10 kosher animals. And he goes through them. Shor, Seth, Eith, these are the behemoths, the Shiva Menichayas, and the three, the seven wild animals, that are Ayal, Tzvi, Yachmor, Akkad, Dishon, To'or, V'Zamer. Heimu Minayim Kamot Kagon Shor Habat, them and their species, meaning it's not just one animal, it's multiple kinds of species of animals, okay? The Hammeri, there's an animal called a Meri, which we'll get back to shortly, Shehei Mimin Shor, it's a kind of an ox, We see they brought it as a korban. It's a domesticated version. V'chal asar ha'minim u'mineihem, all of those 10 species and all of their subspecies, ma'ala gelo mafris, parasa, they are all true, the carbon have split hoof. L'fikach mishehu makir, and therefore if you know what you're doing, you can identify them when you kill them. You don't need to check the mouth, the teeth, we'll see soon. You don't need to check the feet, because yes, I know this is a yachmor, an ayal, a tzvi, and therefore I can eat it. So in principle, there actually are only 10 species which are kosher in the world. That's the bad news. The good news is that actually they break down into, in terms of zoologically, into around 157 different species of kosher animal. So actually there are lots of animals that you can eat, that we can eat as Jews, 157 species. That's the good news if you're a meat eater. The bad news, again, is that we don't know what most of them are. And we'll have to see soon how are we going to identify. If you're wandering around and you see an animal, I went on safari a few years ago with my family, very exciting. We went to Botswana. They have all sorts of interesting animals leaping around the Svelte, whatever it's called there, the Transvaal, and in Botswana, they have the kudu and this one and that one. They have this animal that wanders around with a big M, like a McDonald's M, in black on its backside there. They call that fast food. If you can catch it, then you can eat it. It is technically speaking kosher. But the question is, how do we know exactly? Do you need to recognize these animals? Do you need to have a tradition? According to the Rambam, if you know what these 10 animals are, then you're good to go. If you don't, then you're going to have to start looking around for signs, etc. Okay, fine. More about that very shortly. One last thing before we get into the specifics on these exotic animals, which is as follows. As we said, it's really important to know the difference between a behema and a chaya. Why is it important? They're all kosher in this list of 10. I'll tell you why it's important. Because there are different halachot that apply to a behema and a chaya. And there are two major issues. And we have to understand this to understand what we're going to be reading about soon. When it comes to a domesticated animal, we are not allowed to eat the chelev, the fat, the suet. Have a look in number 4. Ki kol oichel chelev. If anyone, says the Torah, eats chelev, this fat under the abdomen, around the kidney, etc., min a behema, but only from a behema, asher yakriv mimenu isher laHashem, this is the fat that we offer up on the mizbeach in the temple. This goes to God in the temple. V'nichrasa ha'nefesh ha'ochelet, me'amer. Then anyone who eats this chelev, this fat, this suet, it's chayiv kares. This is one of the 36 chiyuvei kares. Kares is a very serious business, meaning, God forbid, cutting off in the next world. Therefore, chelev is very much off the menu. Now, most of us never even see chelev, because the chelev, this fat, is removed by the butchers before the animals even get to our houses. But the reason that we traditionally ate so much schmaltz, I remember my grandmother, Alea Shalom, most of her recipes seem to involve schmaltz of one kind or another. The reason we eat so much chicken fat is because we can't eat the suet. We can't eat the chelev. So if it's a behema, chelev is off the menu. But if it's a chaya, then you can eat the chelev. So if you know what you're doing and you can find a venison or a deer or an antelope or any of these other exotic animals and you want to kill them and eat the chelev, that's great. And it probably tastes absolutely delicious. That's point number one. The second point is the chumrah, the stringency of the chaya is that when you shecht it, you have to cover the blood. Look at number 5. The ish ish mebnei Yisrael min ager hagar b'tocham. Anyone who is from the Jewish people, asher yatsud tzayit, who wants to go hunting for a chaya and kill a non-domesticated animal, chad tzayit chaya or off or a bird, asher yachel with any of the kosher variety, v'shafach et damo, when you spill the blood, when you shech the bird or shech, you slaughter the animal, v'kisahu ba'afar, you must cover the blood with dirt. And that is a halacha for a chaya. So each of a behema and a chaya has a stringency and leniency. The behema has a stringency that you can't eat the chelev, but it has a leniency that you don't have to cover the blood. The chaya has a stringency that you do have to cover the blood, but the leniency is you can't eat the chelev. So I need to know which is a behema and which is a chaya. How can I tell the difference? So the Shulchan Aruch comes to the rescue a little bit and gives you some rather complicated signs, which we've probably never looked at before, but which are worth looking at for a minute now, because we'll see in a minute this is what's going to cause us some grief. And you can see, hopefully, now why it's so important that you know the difference between a behema and a chaya. Number six. Chaya tahora chelba mutar. If you know what's a chaya, a wild animal, you can eat the chela. Udama asor. Of course, you can't eat the blood. But you have to cover the blood. And the rabbis gave us various different signs. Mipnei shmua, by the oral law. Bekarnotea, through the horns. Almost all wild animals have horns. Okay? If you know your horns, you'll know what you're doing. Imhei meputzalot, if they are spread out, imagine the antlers of a deer, okay? Vadai chayat ahori, then that's good. That's going to be fine. The imeinu meputzalot, but if they are not spread out, if it's not got spread out antlers, then there are some more signs. Sari sheyeh behen shloisha simanim. You have to look for these three signs. Kruchot, they have to be kruchot, which the Rama explains are made from like layers. Like an onion put together. The hadurot, they have to be rounded and not broad, okay? They have to be curled. The charukot, they have to have little lines in them, etc. The imchasa echad me'elu, if you don't have one of these three signs, hashloshes imanim, chel ba'asur, then you can't eat the chelev. I don't know if it's a kosher chaya or not. And of course, if in doubt, what to do, hey, kosher is safek lacha, if you really don't know, im hu min chaya or min behema. If I know that it's kosher, but I don't know whether it's a behema or a chaya, so what should I do? So be stringent on both. Chelbo asor, so I won't eat the chelev in case it's a behema. That in lokin malav. But if I did, it's not. You don't get malkus because I'm not sure. Umachasin edemor, but I'll cover the blood in case it's a chaya. So it sounds very straightforward in that sense. If I know that it's kosher, it chews the curd, it has a split hoof, it's one of these 10 species. Then, but I don't know if it's a behema or a chaya, then I just need to err on the side of caution. I'll treat it like a behema, and I'll treat it like a chaya. The question we'll see soon is, what if it has little horns, but they don't look anything like chaya horns? I'll give you an example. A giraffe. Does a giraffe have horns? Yes. Actually, technically, they're called ossicones. I learned that together with a lot of other interesting things this week. It has these two little horns on the top of its head, but they don't look anything like the horns that the Shulchan Aruch is describing. They're not round, and they're not layered, and they're not cracked. They're just little bumps on the top of its head. So what does that mean? Does that mean it's a behema rather than a chaya? Well, no, it's definitely not a domesticated animal. It's a giraffe. It runs around Africa. So what is it? So is it kosher at all? We'll see that soon. That's not so straightforward. And there were always animals that were a suffix in between. Anyone who's learnt Mishnayos, Gemara will know, number seven, briefly, there is an animal called the kvi, or the koi. And the Mishnah here in Bikurim says, kvi, yeshlo drachim shav lechaya, in some ways it's like a chaya, yeshlo drachim shav lehema, some ways it's like a behema, yeshlo drachim shav lebehema v'chaya, in some ways it's like both, the yeshlo drachim she'enu shav lo lebehema v'lo lechaya. And I'm not getting into the details, but the rabbi said, you just have to treat this animal, it's definitely kosher. Maybe it's a behema, maybe it's a chaya, and therefore we take the stringencies of both. It's some kind of a cross between a goat and a gazelle, etc. But that's the kind of the gray zone. Fine. But most of the time we know pretty much what we're doing. It's a behema, or it's a chaya. And what do I need to do? I just need to check. Does it chew the cud? Does it have split hooves? And if I know it's one of the 10 kosher behemas and chayas, then I'm good to go. So Chazal gave us 6 tests. In addition to the ones in the Torah, Chazal gave us 6 rules, and it's important to bear these in mind because they also throw out interesting other questions. How do I know that something really is a kosher animal or not? Again, we tend to go to the butcher for our meat. But think about the old days. You're wandering around, you're hungry, you're on a long hike through the desert, and an animal trots up to you, and you think, gosh, I'm really pretty hungry. I quite like that animal. I know how to shecht animals. And therefore, can I or can I not eat it? This could be the difference between a very nice supper and a hungry night. So the rabbis give us 6 different rules. Let's look at them very briefly, and then we'll open up the question on the bison, etc., etc. Rule number 1, Chazal say in Chulin, number 8, most of these rules are from the Gemara in Chulin, number 8, the Tani Bei Rabbi Shmuel, that's a Gamal Kima Legera Hu, the camel, that one chews the cud. But it doesn't have split hooves. Says the Gemara an astounding thing. Shalit ba'alama yodea, the ruler of the world, God, knows full well, She'en chadava ma'alegera, there is no other animal in the world that chews the cud, the tame, and that is traced, elegamal, other than an animal, other than the camel. Lefikach, pirit hakosav, hu. That's why the posik, the verse says, gamal, hu, because it's, akimalegera, hu, rather. Because it, and only it, is a traif animal. Meaning, rule number one is, if you find any other animal in the world, and you can see that it chews the cud, and you know it's not a camel, good to go. Now, that's an interesting statement. How can the Torah make such a broad statement that there is no other animal in the world, other than the camel, that chews the cud, that is traif, because it doesn't have split hooves? Interestingly, if you want to know more about that, you can look at Rabbi Slifkin's book, The Camel, the Hare, and the Hyrax, because he goes through the fact that there are indeed animals living in places far, far away from the Middle East, like llamas, maybe rhinoceros perhaps as well, which do actually fall into this category. A llama does chew the cud, and it doesn't have split hooves. Is a llama just a kind of camel? Is the Torah interested in llamas because llamas live in South America? Why does the Torah even need to think about llamas because it's been given to the people in the Middle East? There were people, and this is an interesting Kirov discussion, there were authorities in the 18th century that said this is a proof for the divinity of the Torah, that the Torah itself can make such a true statement about the whole world that there is no other animal other than the camel which has this combination. It must be that the Torah comes from Hashem. Now, there are a lot of problems with that statement. Number one, is it true or is it not true? Does it matter that there are llamas in South America? Number two, did the Torah ever set out to do that? The Torah never makes that statement. Rav Chisda does in the Gemara. Is Rav Chisda just telling you what he feels, or Rabbi Ishmael rather, Beit Rabbi Ishmael? Are they just telling you an idea they had at the time, or is this coming from Sinai? Interesting question, not for now. Certainly, I don't think you can base your emunah on the fact that this is proof that the Torah is min hashamayim. There are many other things to base emunah on. This is perhaps not one of them. But this was a discussion in the 18th and 19th century. Okay, so rule number one, if I can see that it chews the cud and it's not a camel, we're good to go. Number nine, Rav Chisda says, Hayim halech b'midbar, if you're walking through the desert, umatze behemeh sheparsaseh chatuchas, and you find an animal without any legs, it's kind of hopping around on its knees or something like that, but it's still kosher if you shech it. Bodek v'pia, just check the mouth. Im eilo shinayim lamal, if it doesn't have any upper teeth, then biyadur shehitahara, you know that it's kosher. Again, a sign that a ruminant has no upper teeth. V'im lav, and if it does have teeth, biyadur shehitamea, bilvad sheyakib ben hagamal. Again, as long as you know the young camel, which doesn't have these upper teeth, any other jaw, if you can check it, you're good to go. You can see that it's kosher. Test number three. The Gemara says a similar idea. I'm not going to read all these inside because I don't want to take up too much time. The Gemara says any animal which has a split hoof and it doesn't chew the cud, you know that it is kosher other than a pig. A pig is the only animal, a chazir is the only animal in the world that has a split hoof that does not chew the cud. So Tzir Rav Chisda says, let's look at the first line. Hayim ahalech baderech, if you're walking along the road, umatza behema shepia gumum, you find an animal and its mouth has been crushed and you can't check the teeth. Boidig b'parsoteh, check the feet, says the Gemara. In parsoteh, because if you see that it has a split hoof, b'yadua shehitahara, you know for a fact that it is kosher. Unless it's a pig. As long as you know what a pig looks like, then you're good to go. That's test number three. Test number four, another interesting test. If you can't find the mouth, because it's been crushed, or you can't test the feet because they've been also crushed or cut off, says the Gemara a very interesting test. Amar Rav Chisda, Hayim halech b'midbar, if you're walking through the desert, umatza behema shepia gamum, and you find an animal with no mouth, uparasaseh chatuchot, and no feet, it's still alive because you've got a shechbet, you didn't find it dead, bodek b'besara, check its meat, says the Gemara. Im mahalech shdiva erev, if it's shesiv erev, if the meat on the rump of the animal, if the grain on the meat is cross-grained, biyadua shehitahara, that's another sign of a kosher animal. Ve'imlav biyadua shehitahara, if not, then it's treif, bilvad sheyakir arud. As long as you know the wild donkey, the wild ass, because that is an exception to the rule, but there's another test. If you can't test the feet, can't test the mouth, check out the meat on the back of the animal. Two more tests. The Gemara says very explicitly in Bechoras that kosher animals cannot crossbreed with traif animals. Very important rule. They cannot crossbreed. If you find a kosher animal and it can crossbreed with another animal and produce live offspring, you know that that other animal is also kosher. The Rambam actually codifies this. Ein, number 13, Ein min tamei mitaber mi min tahor klal. There is no possibility for a kosher and a non-kosher animal to crossbreed. And that's a very useful sign. Because if I have an animal which is questionable, I don't know if this is kosher, we'll see soon, the zebu, etc. If it crossbreeds successfully with a cow and produces offspring, then that's a very positive sign. And finally, the Gemara in Nida, in the Mishnah, actually seems, according to Rashi anyway, to give another test, which is if an animal has horns, then it must be kosher, because a trace animal does not have horns. That's slightly problematic, because the Shulchan Aruch also paskens that a shofar from a non-kosher animal is not kosher on Rosh Hashanah. So obviously you can see that the commentators have a bit of nifty footwork to do to put those two statements together. On the one hand, the Gemara says that only kosher animals have horns. On the other hand, the Shulchan Aruch discusses the case of a shofar from a treif animal. Okay, I'll leave you to do your homework on that and work out how they come together. I put a few things on the footnotes about that too. Someone put here, females don't have horns. Correct, females don't usually have horns. The question is whether you need to recognize the female or the male. Obviously, the female is not expected to have horns, but if the male of that species does have horns, apparently it's suggesting that it will be kosher. Now, let's talk about new animals. What happens if we find a new species of animal? And we'll get into some specific examples in a minute. Now, the Rambam already told us that only these 10 are the ones that we can eat. Now, I also mentioned that those 10 break down into many, many, many subspecies, and therefore those 10 are more than just 10. They're over 100, 170 something. But in theory, and here's the key thing, if I know for a fact that it passes the tests, let's just recap, it has split hooves, it chews the cud, I could test the teeth, I could test the meat, I can test the hooves, I can see if it crossbreeds, etc. There is no mention anywhere in the Gemara or in the Rishonim of the need for a Masorah. And that is perhaps the most important line of the Shir so far. Whereas when it comes to birds that we talked about last week, there is a very clear discussion in the Gemara and in the Rishonim about the need for a Masorah. We are not sure what these 24 trait birds are. I need to have a tradition. No one ever mentions this when it comes to animals. No mention of a Masorah, just tests. So it sounds like as long as I can do the tests and I know what I'm doing, then I can eat any animal that passes the tests. Fine. Now comes the complicating feature, which we'll see soon, caused all of the discussion, disruption, agmas nefesh, when it comes to all of these new animals. The shach. Let's focus. This shach is a very important shach. The shach was living in the 17th century. And he comes along on the Shulchan Aruch and says as follows. This is on the issue of identifying the chaya and the behema, the different kinds of horns. Look what he says. Ein perishel dvarim elu bebet Yosef. He says, you can look at the Bet Yosef. And then he says a very cryptic, enigmatic comment. He says, ulefi she'ein lanu ata ela ma shekibalnu b'mazoiret. Since we only know now what we know through tradition, he's coming in the 1600s saying this, ukir lekamam b'sif peybed. And he refers you to the discussion about birds, Gabi Simani Ha'of, Kassarati. So I've not gone at length into all of the signs for a kosher chaya or behema, because we, just like with birds, we only rely on tradition. Now, what's he talking about? And here's the key question. When the Shach says, today we only rely on traditions, that's why I'm not going into detail, which specific element of the halacha is he talking about? Because this is a new thing. No one ever mentioned tradition before. He mentions it now. So the Pashtus is, it seems pretty clear, and the Prima Gadim says this, that what's he talking about? He's talking about eating chaylev. Remember the context here. I have an animal, and I'm not sure whether it's a chaya or a behema. Can I eat the chaylev, or can I not eat the chaylev? Comes along the Shach, apparently, and says, and again, this is how the Prima Gadim reads him, which is, well, you know, chaylev is chayv kores. You don't mess around with chaylev. If you don't know what you're doing, don't eat the chaylev. And the only animals for which we eat the chaylev are ones that we have a tradition. It's a very limited halacha. He's simply telling you, don't play around with chalev. If it's a deer, if it's something that we have a tradition for, you can eat the chalev. If not, set it to one side. But he's not talking about whether the animal is kosher or not. Why would he be? We have signs to tell if the animal's kosher. He's just talking about the difference between a chaya and a behemah. That's all fine and good. The problem is, the Chochmas Adam doesn't see it that way. Chochmas Adam in number 19, and again, I'm sorry, this is all a bit technical, but you need to know this, because in a minute we're going to start talking about buffaloes, etc. The Chochmas Adam says the following. He is very, very important posek, Rav Avram Danziger in 18th century Central Europe. Look here at the end of number 19. We only eat today what we have a Masera for from our fathers, just like below with the birds. In Cain, we are the only chayas, the only wild animals we're allowed to eat, is rak hatzvi, it's just the antelope, shenikrolanu, which is well known to us. Therefore, I'm not giving you the signs. Now, think about what's happened here. Very important move has just taken place. The Chochmas Adam has just said that it's not just about the chalef. In fact, we're not allowed to eat any other chaya at all. It's not kosher unless we have a tradition for it. Now, that's a big step in a stringent direction. Because now the only animals that I'll be able to eat, the only chayas I can eat, are animals which I have a tradition for, which is going to cut out most of the list, isn't it? Because I don't know what a yachmor and an akor and a zamer, I don't know what they are, and it sounds like the tests won't help. A lot of people jumped up and down and said, where did you get this from? That's not what the Shach says. I brought you a number 20, the Pitchei Tshuva, which I'm not going to read through in great detail, but the Pitchei Tshuva vehemently opposes this ruling, and he says, absolutely not. The only thing we need for testing out new animals are the tests in the Torah and the Gemara. We do not need a Masorah other than maybe for eating chalev. This is an inappropriate extension of this idea. But the Chochmas Adam is the Chochmas Adam. And not only the Chochmas Adam, but the Orach HaShulchan in number 21 says the same thing. And the Orach HaShulchan is a very, very important posek. He says number 21, the Maisa ain anu sonchen ala simanim. We don't rely on any of these signs anymore. She ain anu bikim bahem. We just don't know exactly what we're doing. The ain chaya nechel ela b'masoris. Fine. Where does that leave us in practice? Before we now get into all of the weird and wonderful questions about bison and buffalo, etc., it seems as that we're basically at the following place. According to some authorities, as long as I can check the boxes on the tests, I look at the teeth, I look at the hooves, etc., then I'm good to go. According to others, the Chochmas Adam, the Orach HaShulchan, there is a new requirement based on this shach, which they're reading in a specific way, which is that if it's a chaya, if it's a wild animal, I can't eat it at all, forget about the chaylev, I can't eat anything, unless I clearly have a masora. So obviously, a lot is going to depend on which of these directions you decide to move in, as to whether you can eat these new things. Let's talk about some new animals, because this is the fun bit with all the pictures. Bison. Now, here's something you may not know. The buffalo of the bison are often, the name is used interchangeably, and that's often a mistake. There are basically four species of buffalo stroke bison. There's the European bison, there's the American bison. Now, the American bison, I hate to break it to you folks, but the American bison is what they call buffalo. So Buffalo Bill should really be Bison Bill. But Bison Bill doesn't really go the same way for most people, okay? In London, a bison is something you wash your hands in, but that's a whole different question. But Buffalo Bill is misnamed. He should really be called Bison Bill. And here's a picture of a North American bison. They look pretty kosher. They check most of the boxes. They have split hooves. Oops, sorry about that. I just lost my bison. There we are. They have split hooves. They chew the cud. They pass all the tests. They interbreed remarkably well with cattle. In fact, they crossbreed American bison with regular cattle, and they produce something called not a buffalo but a beefalo. In North America, this is a very well liked piece of meat called a beefalo. It's usually actually the female bison that they crossbreed with the male cows, the bulls. For various technical reasons about fetal deformations, but they crossbreed beautifully. So, okay, can you eat beefalo? Is there any problem? So again, if you go with the tests, it passes all the tests. But is there a Masora? So obviously there's no Masora for North American bison. They were only discovered in the 16th century. Ah, what about turkeys? Well, good, turkeys are the same. But Jews have been eating turkeys for the last 400 years. They have not been eating beefalo. They've not been eating bison for the last 400 years. And therefore, does it have the same level of Masora? Then there's the Asiatic water buffalo. Now, this is much better known. Here's one here, an Asiatic water buffalo. This is a well-known species, which has been, we'll see in a minute, referred to frequently by the Mephoroshim. Definitely known to Chazal, possibly known in the Torah as well, and all over the world. And in fact, according to Rabbi Yehuda Felix, they were very common even in Israel in the Chula Valley, when the Chula Valley still had all the water in it, and before it was drained and all the malaria was taken away, there were a lot of water buffalo that used to graze there as well. Of course, water buffalo were brought to Europe, possibly by the Romans, certainly by the time of the Goths and by the Crusades, and in fact, anyone who is interested in eating mozzarella will know that buffalo mozzarella is the best kind of mozzarella you can get. Actually, again, I asked my Italian daughter-in-law, she assured me it was the second best kind of mozzarella that you can get, but if you want any more shaklavatari on that, you have to ask the Italians. But you can go to Rome and you can get buffalo mozzarella, Chalav Yisrael, okay, which is something to bear in mind next time you go to Rome. And the other one, of course, is the African buffalo. There's an African buffalo here, also well known to Chazal, because Africa's just around the corner. And in fact, the buffalo, probably the water buffalo from Asia, is referred to in many of the Mephoroshim. Have a look here. Look at number 23. This will give you a bit of a giggle. The Mordechi, who is writing in the Balei HaTosfos, says, Perush Rebbeinu Chananel, he quotes from the 10th century Rebbeinu Chananel in North Africa, Yabe Shor Habar, there is a wild ox, Shekarim, the Ruffalo. He calls it the Ruffalo. I assume he's talking about the buffalo, and if anyone's ever come across the Gruffalo, that is completely unrelated, if anyone has any children or grandchildren, not to be confused. And Rabbi Seinah Ga'anim Nimnu Alav Shemachasim Demoy. Okay, the Ruffalo, he says, is a chaya. You have to cover its blood. So two toasters talk about buffaloes. The Osam Buffalo, Sha'anakorim Ra'aim, he says some people call it the Ra'aim. It's probably not the Ra'aim. The Arbarbanel says the Yachmor Haim Buffaloes. He says maybe the buffalo is the Yachmor. And finally, I brought the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch refers to buffaloes. Ha buffalo, he says, Na'agu shelo lechasas damim, the minhag is we treat it like a behema, we do not cover its blood. The yesh misakin, says the Ramah, there are those who are not so clear, the buffaloes, shehu shor habar, maybe it's a wild ox, shema chayahu, it could be a chaya, alkein tov lechasasu b'la brocha, you cover the blood without a brocha. So is buffalo kosher? Definitely, because the Shulchan Aruch identifies buffalo as kosher. But which buffalo is it talking about? Not the North American buffalo. So your beefalo is not going to fall into this Shulchan Aruch. Here is Rav Shlomo Amar, a picture of him examining the jaws, the teeth of a water buffalo here. Rav Shlomo Amar sitting in a car here looking at a water buffalo jaw and checking, like we saw in the Gemara, whether it has the upper teeth. The answer is it does not have the upper teeth and therefore is kosher. But this is not necessarily going to help you, as I said, with the North American species, because unlike the buffalo in the Shulchan Aruch, there's no Masora for that. Ah, you're going to say to me, do we need a Masora? And the answer is, depends on who you ask. According to the Gemara, according to the Rishonim, you do not need a Masora, you just need to check off the boxes. And that checks off beautifully. According to the Shach, etc., as read by the Chochmas Adam and the Orcha Shulchan, you will not be able to eat your bison because it comes from North America and it does not have a Masora, essentially. Now, let's look at the Zebu. What is a Zebu? Here is a picture of a Zebu. Zebu is sometimes called an Indian cow. It is very distinctive because it has a hump. It has all this flap of skin at the bottom. By the way, bison and buffalo, you can also tell that the differences between them, the horns, the beard, the hump, etc. But the Zebu has all of this stuff sagging down, which makes it extremely good in hot weather. because it's got all of these sweat glands that that get rid of the moisture, get rid of the heat, and therefore they're excellent cattle in hot weather. You can put them outside. They don't drink that much water. They do perfectly well in very hot climates, and they taste great, apparently. And therefore the Zebu, and I brought you a little bit of information, also, as I said, called the Indian cow, became very popular. Dairy camels, dairy cattle, riding animals, beef cattle, etc. People even have them as pets. You can get a miniature Zebu. I don't know if you know anybody with a miniature Zebu. If you're looking for something to do in the days of lockdown, get yourself a miniature Zebu, keep it at home, and then maybe you'll be able to eat it as well. They pass all the tests. They have all of the characteristics of a kosher mammal. They chew the cud. They have split hooves. They pass all the tests in the Gemara. And they crossbreed wonderfully with regular cattle. So are they or are they not kosher? So now we need to go into the 1950 Zebu crisis. Now, in the 1950s, some of you are probably familiar with the Suez crisis. But many of you probably never realized that there was also a Zebu crisis. Let me explain to you what happened. Basically, around 70 years ago, the Vat HaRabbonim in Paris suggested to the Rabbanut in Israel, why don't we export Zebu from Madagascar? This is where it gets all quite exotic. Why are the French rabbinate talking about Madagascar? Because until 1958, Madagascar was a French colony. So the Rabbanut in Paris said, let's export Zebu to Israel. They asked the Rabbanut, and Rav Herzog said, brilliant, it's fantastic, we'll take it. It checks all the boxes, it's got a split hoof, it crossbreeds with cows, etc., no problem. The Chazon Ish, however, said, I actually have a problem with this, and the Chazon Ish ruled that the Zebu was not kosher. Why? Why did the Chazon Ish rule this way? And the answer is, you know why, because he followed the tradition of the Chochmas Adam and the Oruch HaShulchan. He said, and I'm not going to read through the entire thing here, I'll just bring up a few aspects from this Chazon Ish, which are very important. He said a few things which you need to bear in mind. First of all, he said, look, I'm worried that people are going to get mixed up between behemoth and chayas. If they do, they may end up eating chaylev. He says, I'm not sure whether the zebu is a behemoth or a chaya, and we don't get involved in that anymore. We rely on tradition. Okay? That's not so controversial. He also then said, an I paskin like the Chazon Ish, Chochmas Adam, excuse me, I paskin like the Chochmas Adam, that we need a tradition not only to eat the chaylev, but also to eat the animal, and not only for a chaya, but also for a behemoth. And that's a completely noizach. It's a completely new thing. The Chazon Ish comes along and says that I'm going to be machmir not only on non-domesticated animals, but even on behemoths, even on domesticated animals, we're not going to eat anything unless we clearly have a Masorah, and there is no Masorah for Zebu. They come from South America, South Asia, South America, now Madagascar, etc. We do not have any Masorah, therefore we cannot eat them. And the Chochmas Adam, as far as we're concerned, is the Rav for Lithuanian Jewry. The Chochmas Adam, you should understand, was before the Mishnah Berurah became the kind of go-to place for many Ashkenazim in Halacha. So the Chai Adam, Chochmas Adam, is the same person, Avram Danziger. That was very much the go-to work. People studied that as the bottom line in Halacha. And therefore comes along the Chazon Ish and says, as far as we're concerned, we don't mess around with anything new, and there's a lot of meta-halachic issues as well. He said, we're worried about reform, we're worried about new things, we're worried about new innovations, we are not innovating anything new at this point. Rav Herzog was distraught. He said, that's one thing's got nothing to do with the other. He even questions whether you might be liable for Baal Tosef. You're adding on to the Torah by requiring a Masorah for this animal. Rav Herzog was very unhappy with the Chazon Ish, that he extended the halacha in this way, that even a behemoth, even a domesticated animal now needs a Masorah. But the Chazon Ish would not budge. The Seitler, who was of course his brother-in-law, also ruled that the Zebu was not kosher. And in deference to the Chazon Ish, the Rabbanut decided not to import the Zebu in 1950. I don't know how Rav Herzog felt about that, but Zebu was not on the menu. Now, here's another picture, a nice picture of a friendly-looking Zebu, okay? Because now we need to update to the 2004 Zebu crisis. Now, this is one you may have missed. In 2004, all of a sudden it was discovered that even though in theory the Chazon Ish had ruled that Zebu were not kosher, Zebu meat was all over the place. Many of the Hashgachas revealed, when pressed, that actually a lot of the meat that they were importing to Israel was Zebu meat. Most of the cows had been crossbred by now with Zebu. Not only that, but Zebu have far less lesions on their lungs, for reasons that I'm not 100% sure of. You have to ask a zoologist. But that made them even better for the Mahadrin Hechsherim. So it was Dafka the Mahadrin Hechsherim that had a lot of the Zebu meat. And everyone suddenly went crazy and said, well, one second, is this meat kosher? The Chazon Ish said the meat is not kosher. Now we're all eating Zebu and nobody even realized, or part Zebu, part not Zebu. And then somebody else put their hand up and said, I'll tell you something else. Half of the Sifrei Torah, tefillin, and mezuzahs that we use are all written on cloth made from Zebu. And now everybody basically said, oy vey, because you can only use the cloth of a kosher animal in order to write a mezuzah or a Sefer Torah. If you're now in 1950, when they were talking about some new animal from Madagascar, so the Chazon Ish said, you know something, why do we even need it? He says at the end, we don't need it. We'll eat beef, we'll stick to beef, we'll stick to lamb, we're happy with that. Now you're dealing with a completely new reality that by 2004, Zebu was everywhere. It was in the food chain, it was in the milk, it was in the meat, it was in the Sifrei Torah, and obviously everything was much more, the stakes, forgive the pun, but the stakes were much higher at this particular point in time. Rav Eliashiv convened a Beis Din, a little committee to discuss this, and basically concluded that even though they preferred to pass like the Chazon Ish, b'di'evad, there were reasons to be mekel. There were reasons to be lenient with the Zebu, even though he didn't like it. But many other Meforshim and Poskim are explicitly lenient and quite happy to eat the Zebu meat. As we saw, Rav Herzog was happy with it, Rav Meshulam Rotz was happy with it, Rav Vosner was perfectly happy to eat the Zebu. Rav Belsky in America was happy. Rav Osher Weiss has a tshuva, and he says also that there's no problem eating the Zebu. Why? What are the reasons to be lenient? So let me give you seven reasons why eating Zebu is probably fine according to these poskim. Number one, let's just recap. The Shach that introduced in the 1600s this requirement for a Masara was probably only talking about Chelev. He talks about it in the Yoredeya 80, not 79, which deals with kosher animals, and therefore probably we can paskin like the other views that said it's got nothing to do with Chayas and Behemoth Kashrus itself. Secondly, the Chazon Ish said in 1950 that the Zebu was a new species. Since then we've discovered actually the Zebu is not a new species. They didn't bring a Zebu to the Chazon Ish as far as I'm aware. We know a lot more now about the history of the Zebu. People have been eating it all over the world. People have been eating it in India, etc. Interesting question, can the non-Jewish world create some kind of Masorah? But even Jews in India for thousands of years were eating Zebu. And the Chazon Ish also ate turkey. Rav Osher Weiss says, one second, you can't on the one hand eat turkey and on the other hand say that the Zebu is not kosher. Those two things do not go together, because the need for a Masorah, a tradition with birds, is much more central halachically. And if you're fine with that, with turkey, then you must be fine with the Zebu, because the need for a Masorah with animals is far, far less central to the halacha. Next, the Chazon Ish is paskening for the Lithuanian community. Says Rav Osher Weiss, okay, shkoyach. But if you're from the Hasidic community, if you're from Central Europe, if you're not from Lita, then what's the problem? Certainly if you're Sephardi. If you're Sephardi, you may not even require a Masorah for the birds. Certainly you're not going to be worried about the Chazon Ish in this particular case. Also, I mentioned that they crossbreed very happily, and all the signs have been ticked. Later on, the Chazon Ish himself said it could be that they're really essentially kosher, but because of the reality of the Reform community, 1950, etc., we don't want to allow it. Now, it's not 1950 anymore. Now, a few things have changed. Number one, we're not threatened by the Reform community to the same degree halachically. And number two, the zibus are everywhere. And finally, when it comes to a crossbreed, it could be that by the time you hit the third generation, crossbred animals are much less of a problem. It depends on how you understand the crossbreed. Does it go by rove? Does it go by, the majority of the DNA, etc.? But bottom line, you're probably eating zebu and you didn't even realize it. And my wife sent me an interesting article yesterday about wengu. Have you ever heard of wengu? Wengu meat? Wengu meat is from Japan. And apparently it's amazing. It's meant to be very, very tasty. And they're now talking about that if you're a bit of a fresser and you like a good steak, you've got to get a wengu steak. Okay? Is it kosher? Well, obviously it has to be shechted, etc., etc. But the wengu is just a Japanese cow. And therefore, there's no shiloh there. If it's prepared in all the correct ways, then wengu will definitely be kosher. I don't know if you can get it mahadrin, if you're looking for mahadrin, but that's a different question. Okay, good. So zebu probably gets a check. It's probably fine today. Buffalo, the Asian variety, yes. The American variety depends on who you ask. Let's finish with giraffe. Are giraffes kosher? Now, one of the most long-standing myths around is that, well, giraffes are kosher, but we don't know where to shecht them. Yeah? Everybody has heard that. It's complete nonsense. Because if you can shecht a pigeon where your room for maneuver is about an inch and a half, then you can shecht a giraffe that has a 6-foot long neck. Anywhere on that 6-foot stretch will be good for your shechita. That's not the reason that we don't shecht giraffes. The reason we don't eat giraffes is because their meat is phenomenally expensive, although apparently it tastes lovely. I brought you a quote here from a celebrity chef in England that talks about how delightful giraffe meat is when prepared appropriately. But it costs a fortune of money, and you can't get the giraffe to lie down in order to be shechted. I don't know if any of you have ever been to an abattoir and worked out how they actually do the shechita. If you did, you might become a vegetarian, is the truth. But the giraffes are not very compliant. And one kick is going to finish off all the people trying to shecht it, and therefore we do not eat giraffe for those practical reasons. However, the Septuagint, the ancient Greek translation of the Torah, translates the zamer as camelopardalis. Camelopardalis. Camelopardalis was the camel leopard. The camel leopard was the original word for the giraffe. Giraffe itself is an Arabic word. Here's a little bit of trivial but very interesting background. Here, look at number 26. Rav Sajigon on Vayikra translates, it should say Rav Sajigon there, the Zamar, he translated as Zarafa. Zarafa is a giraffe. However, Rashi says that we're not 100% sure what these things are, and the Ibn Ezra said the same thing, and we don't eat them. Also, it's very unlikely that the giraffe is the Zamar on an archaeological basis, because they don't find any giraffe bones around Eretz Yisrael at all, and therefore it's much more likely that the Zamar was some kind of a wild goat of some kind. And I mentioned before that there's a secondary problem with the giraffe, that its little horns may not be the kind of horns that make for a kosher chaya. So before you run out to the shops and buy your giraffe steaks, please check with your local Orthodox rabbi whether you're okay to eat that. There is another problem which needs to be mentioned, is the giraffe is an endangered species. And therefore, leaving aside kashrus, there may well be a meta-halachic problem eating it at all. And this raises a question which I just want to mention at the end here, which is, in any situation where you're eating animals, apart from the kashrus issue, there is a legitimate question as to the ethics of raising animals in that way, whether you feel that veal is appropriate to eat, whether you feel that chickens which are farmed are appropriate to eat. That's a separate question. It's nothing to do with kashrus. But on endangered species, just let me throw out one source just at the end here. The Midrash in Kohelet Rabbah says, Ra'ei et Masa Elokim, possibly from Kohelet, look at the works of God. Ki mi yichol etaken et asher yiftor. Okay, who can fix something if it's broken? Look at this beautiful Midrash. B'sha'a shebara kadosh baruch hu et ha'adam, when God created mankind, Adam HaRishon, Natlu vehechziru al kol ilani Gan Eden. He took him round all of the trees of Gan Eden. Va'amalon, he said to him, Re'ei, look at this. Look how beautiful this is. Re'ei ma'asai, look at my deeds. Kama naim u'mushubachim hein. Look how beautiful the world is around us. V'kal ma'ase barasi b'shvilcha barasi. Everything I've created, he says, I've created for you. You human beings, you're allowed to use it. But tein datcha, but be very careful. Shalota kalkel v'tachrivet olami. But when you're using my world, do not abuse my world. Don't mess it up. Don't destroy my world. She'im kil kalta, because if you mess it up, ein mi she'itakin achrecha. There's no one else that's going to fix it after you. No one can fix this world if you destroy it. Very beautiful midrashic source that goes to the very modern question as to the use of the world and the environmentally sustainable ways that we can use the world. So quite apart from the kashrus issues, it's very important. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about veal, whether it's appropriate, whether it's ethical to eat veal or not ethical to eat veal. These are important issues to ask as well. But purely on the kashrus issues, hopefully we've come to some clear conclusions. Let's summarize as follows. It basically comes down to the following. That the Torah and the Gemara are extremely clear about the signs as to how to spot a kosher chaya or a behema. And they don't mention anywhere the need for a masorah. As long as you know what you're doing, you can check them, you're good to go. The Shach comes along and says on the laws of chelev, of the forbidden fat of a behema, that we only rely on masorah. That became amplified by a very serious poskim, the Chochmas Adam, the Aruch HaShulchan, into a general requirement for masorah for chayas, and the Chazon Ish in the 1950s, expanded that further into a general need for Masorah for behemoths as well. Depending on who you ask, this question will impact on the buffalo, the bison, the zebu, and other things like the giraffe. But I think it's worth realizing, and I didn't realize this either, that zebu is very much on your plate on Shabbos, and thank God that's probably not a big halachic problem. So they are the issues that I wanted to cover today. Hopefully that's of interest and informative on an issue which, again, we all learn when we're kids, split hooves, chew the cud, but there's a little bit more to it than that. Next week, as I said, I just want to deal with what I think is just a fascinating issue and a very topical issue as well, because you may be aware that there is actually a massive locust plague going on at the moment in Africa, a horrendous disruption of crops in Africa, which is going to cause massive strain on the African economy, etc. And this is a context in which the Torah also discusses locusts. Because locusts are seen in Yoel, in the Torah itself, etc., as a plague. We're going to look at that a little bit next week. The Gemara asks, what bracha do you make on locusts? And that comes up as well. We'll see that next week too. And we'll talk just for one shiur about locusts. And then, please God, 2 weeks from now, we'll be back onto other territory. We'll be in Elul by then. And we'll talk about other things. But for now, that's all I need to say about the exotic animals. Thank you for being on the shiur. I wish you all a healthy week. Thank you again for the sponsorship. It should be an aliyah for the neshama of the sponsorship, the person who sponsored the shiur, who he sponsored it for. And please God, I'll see you all being well next week. Keep well.
Yes. Thank you very much. How do we make a donation?
Mrs. Spivak, I can put on the chat now if I can do that, if I can find it in time. I can put her details on the, just one second. I can do that.